Lady Limerick, reel 2.
You could do it, it didn't matter.
Had you ever seen seriously ill people, wounded people before?
No.
Was that upsetting?
No, I don't think so, because if you go in for that sort of life, you make up your mind that that's what you're going to do.
Yes, except that you might not have realised just what it
was. No, I think I was sufficiently interested. I remember when I was at St. Mary's Paddington, I had no idea whether I should stand up to see an operation. One always heard about people fainting and so forth. And the first time that I was sent up to see an operation, I was in the gallery around the theatre, and there were several probationers there too, and I said, do you mind if I have the seat nearest the door, because I don't know whether I'm really going to enjoy this very much. And they poo-pooed me and roared and laughed and said, you know, said it's a silly creature and all the rest of it. Well, when the thing started, I was absolutely fascinated. I was so interested that it didn't worry me. But half of them, the young probationers who'd scoffed at me, did make very rapid exits. I only realised it afterwards because I was watching so closely what was happening. But I did find afterwards that it was very much easier to be in the theatre doing something than just watching something. As long as you were doing something, you felt it was worthwhile.
Oh, I beg
your pardon. When you were VAD, did you have opportunity to assist in operations?
Oh, yes. When I was in hospital.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes. I worked in the
theatre. Did you have a choice?
Yes. Well, up to a point, no. No, I think you were told that you were expected to go there, and I suppose you said very firmly you didn't want to go. You would have probably been given an option of going somewhere else. But, I was keen to go work in the theatre, and I did enjoy it. And we had light-hearted intervals. I remember that wasn't at all popular bedroom, because... one thing, I had a motor bicycle, and I used to go up to London for my half days, which happened very rarely, because although theoretically we had a half day a week, it very rarely happened, because a convoy would come in that day and we wouldn't get off at all, perhaps for 2 or 3 days, not even half an hour. But when I did get off, I had this motor bicycle that I used to go tracking up to London on. And one day, coming back on my motor bicycle, I met a lot of small children near a pond. They got a little kid with a tight stone around its neck, and they were just about to throw it into the pond. And of course, this really got my goat, and I snatched it from them and I put it under my arm and I got back to the hospital. I was on night duty at the time. And what to do with this wretched animal, of course, was a very embarrassing situation, so I took it along to my ward. And I said to one of the patients, can you do anything about this kid? Oh, give it to me, nurse, he said, give it to me. I think he put it in his bed that night. I never asked, but anyhow, next morning it was all right there. And it was in a field, this hospital, and the patients were absolutely delighted. They treated it as a mascot, you know. They made a little hut for it on the field and attached tethered it there, and everything went very well, and they loved it dearly. And then one day the matron came along. Well, it's been about a fortnight later, I suppose, saw this animal and was absolutely furious and of course was enraged at me for keeping it there, but I said it was such a good thing to the patient, so that was overlooked for the time being, but unfortunately it escaped one day. And have you taken everything there is in the safe out?
Yeah, I left a few things of small value.
Right. And then one day this wretched creature escaped, and a most undignified scene, I must say, followed. There was I and Kevin and Abram rushing after it, plus all the patients in wheelchairs and on crutches and everything else, view hallooing, you know, all around the compound. And this was observed by the matron, and I was told I was getting rid of it immediately. And of course thereafter, whenever I went into any ward, I used to be greeted with, that's the owner of the kid. Well, we had our light-hearted moments, but looking back on it now, I was young and, of course, going straight from school, it was quite limited to me. But how these middle-aged married women put up with what they did. Had to be in by 10 o'clock and never allowed out this here and there. It's extraordinary. Nowadays, just think of it.
What was the age range of the women you were working?
Oh, they were mostly elderly. Well, middle-aged, we'd say. Two young ones, but they were mostly, I should say, in the late 40s, 50s, that sort of thing. Oh, married women with grown-up children, that sort of thing. I don't know what they thought of these upstarts who came in, but they put up with these things, you see, because they weren't trained, of course, any more than I was. And they were treated quite hardly by some of the professionals.
How did you get on with each other, VFDs?
Oh, we had a wonderful time. I had lots of friends there, and we used to enjoy all our off-duty times together when we had them. I used to try and come up London when I could to see my family. It's extraordinary when you think of it, riding round at Hyde Park Corner on a motor bicycle without a tremor. You see, there's no traffic at all practically in those days. My bicycle stood me in very good stead until I met a very hard brick wall with it one day trying to avoid somebody and smashed it to pieces. And that was that. Then I hired a horse, which I kept in at a farm close by the hospital. And I used to go riding in Windsor Great Park. And that was a great, that infuriated the matron, of course, too. I dared to do such a thing. I don't know why she took this very violent attitude about my pastimes. Motor bicycles and horses and kids were too much for her.
Was that unusual for a young woman to have a motorbike?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, it was considered quite a... You see, one of those things, too, when you, in those days, you hadn't got a kick-starter, you know, you had to pursue it, rush along behind it or beside it, and leap on it. And of course it infuriated because I had nothing but uniform. I used to ride in uniform. I suppose she thought that was very derogatory to the uniform or something. I don't know, she didn't like it at all, anyway.
What did your parents think of the motorbike?
Oh, they didn't mind. They're very long-suffering people, my parents.
Did they think of you being the AD?
Well, they thought it was a very good idea. Oh, yes, they quite did encourage that. And my mother was splendid because all our relations and friends said, how could she possibly let her daughter go out and shop her over to France and all that kind of business those days. It was quite a thing. I mean, my sister, when she came out, she wasn't allowed to walk down the street without a maid to go with her. And then, of course, there was I, hoofed out to France on my own and left to get along with it. But I was brought up abroad. I'd lived out in Romania for the first 7 years of my life. So I was accustomed to travelling. It meant nothing to me. And I could speak a fair amount of languages, so why me at all?
Do you think the fact of the freedom that it gave young women was one of the important attractions of joining, either in Britain or especially going overseas?
Oh, I think so. I think so. And it made them, it turned them into realists at a young age. I mean, this ridiculous business that they were so guarded and looked after and couldn't do anything on their own, which was an absurd situation, really. That all had to go by the board when they were doing jobs on their own. That was one of the really good things that came out of the First World War. I think a lot of the nonsense that there was socially about those sort of things.
You think it made a lasting change?
Oh, yes, tremendous. Oh, it's never went back again to things like that. You couldn't, could you? I mean, when once people had been given their liberty.
Yeah, difficult.
And of course I noticed so much that being really younger than most people who got involved in the war, I found that I had so much more in common with people 10, 15, 20 years older than myself than with ones a couple of years younger who hadn't been in the war, who shared an experience with people which made you feel much more at home with them than people who just... for obvious reasons, not been involved in it at all.
Was that something that continued?
Oh, yes, I think so.
Time went on.
Yes, yes.
Certain group.
I intended to be much more, I think, to find much more companionship with older people than with younger people because of that. It matured you. Undoubtedly, it matured you. I mean, at 18, you were a mature person, whereas in the old days at 18, you were still a teenager and not interested in the sort of things which interested you afterwards. I would say. I think that would be everybody's experience.
Were all your friends of your age involved in the war effort?
Very few of them, curiously enough, in nursing. A lot of them, of course, stayed on at school until a couple of years longer. Some of them went into munitions. Some of them went into... Quite a lot of them went into the Red Cross, and on the administrative side, they were working in the Wounded and Missing Department or in the Prisoners of War Department or something of that kind.
Where would that be? Would that be more appropriate for people of their class and education?
I suppose unless they had an urge for nursing, it would have been. Of course, the women's services didn't start at the beginning of the war, did they? They only started later on. My sister went into the Red Cross wounded and missing department for the first bit of the war before she joined the Wrens. And then, see, there was no direction of women at that stage into the branches that they we had in the last World War. You could more or less choose what you wanted to do, and nobody was going to come and say, well, you are an age now and you've got to be doing something useful. But certainly amongst all one's friends, they all did do something as soon as they'd left school. But it tended to be more on the administrative side. Well, sometimes in the land, you know, they if they were interested in they would become land girls.
Yes, I hope to be able to interview some land girls.
Yes.
I haven't done any
yet. Yes.
I have a few names.
Yes. Well, that would be interesting because, of course, there were not nearly so many of them as in the last war when that was one of the four fields into which they were directed.
Also, it was rather startling then, I think.
Yes. Oh, yes, dressing in trousers and all that sort of thing, too. Yes. Yeah, knickerbockers and that kind of thing, yes. Oh, yes, it was much more of an adventure then than it was in this last war.
With all your friends working for the war, was your social life able to continue at all?
Oh, no, I didn't have any at all, of course, because one was full-time doing other things. When you came, when you had any leave, your friends who were back from France or whatever it was, they might have been fighting or on leave, then you did have a certain amount of social life. But of course, it wasn't the same kind of social life that existed before. I mean, you went to Thé d'Ensemble, were the awful things in those days. It makes a nightmare to think of it now. But that was a sort of very obvious entertainment. Clubs, there were lots of clubs where you had that. Hotels all had Thé d'Ensemble. Just fit in with people who were back on leave and got friends and could just nip in for an afternoon, whatever it was, and that was that. Or go to a theatre, I suppose, but otherwise, you were working all day, there wasn't any opportunity.
I suppose probably all you wanted most of the time would have been flopped down in bed.
Yes.
What were your hours like once you had finished your training in the hospital?
Well, at the military hospital I was at, our hours were 8 in the morning till 8 at night, and we did a 2 month stint on night duty without an hour off. I mean, we were off in the daytime, of course, from 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night. But we certainly had 2 months straight on end. And as I say, I had much more than that because I did so many other people's night duties too. And when you came off night duty, you came off at 8 in the morning, you were allowed to go to bed, but you had to be on duty at 2 that afternoon. And equally, when you went on night duty, you were on in the morning from 8 till 2, and you were allowed to go to bed at 2, but you had to come on again at 8 that evening. None of this nonsense of having a day or night off or whatever it is they have now. 2 or 3 nights off, I think, very often between whiles. And they don't do more than about a fortnight or something at a time. I wouldn't like that. I'd much sooner the whole stretch straight away, so I think it's much less disorganizing.
You can get used to it.
Yes. Oh, yes, you can get used to anything in this life if you're going to do it, I think. I never found it all that tiring. I found it... I used to need so much sleep. I used to be out quite a lot of the day and seem to be quite wired at night.
What did you think were the differences between day duty and night duty, particularly that made night duty appeal to you?
Well, you were on your own, for one thing. You were completely responsible, and if at that age you liked responsibility, which I hate now, you enjoyed it. You got to know the patients better, I think, so there's more time. I mean, they'd love to have a chat and that sort of thing, or if they were awake in the night, they'd be awfully grateful if somebody come and give them a cup of tea or something and talk to them. And therefore, they became much more real persons to you than when you were flying about all day, very busy all the time, and really not having time to talk to them or chat to them. So I think I enjoyed that as much as anything, getting to know them better. And as I say, being on your own. We were given our meal, which we had to cook for ourselves. We never started to cook it as a rule. I just ate anything that was there, but not even bothering to cook it. I remember one awful experience I had. It was in winter, and it was snowing, or had been snowing very hard, and you know how sound travels in a very still, frosty night. And I'd come on duty that night, and a patient that we were very, very fond of, obviously, he'd been there for a long time, I was told he died, quite unexpectedly. And this was really an awful shock, because we were all, he was the life and soul of the ward, you know, he'd got to that stage. And I was thinking about this at about 2 o'clock in the morning, I suppose, and suddenly I heard the most piercing scream. And it came from the direction of the mortuary, which was not very far from the ward I was in. And we talk about people's blood running cold or their hair standing on ends, every time it's ever happened to me, I really felt absolutely terrified, because I was quite sure that that was this man, he'd come to life, and there he found himself lying on a slab in the mortuary, you know, and it was going off his head. So I went to the hut next door, and we weren't ever supposed to leave our huts, but I couldn't face going to that mortuary alone. I said to the VAD in the next hut, will you come with me? I'm sure this is what's happened, we'll come to the mortuary and see. So she came out too. We had lanterns, of course no torches in those days, just lanterns. And when we got just up to the mortuary, I was trying to screw up my courage to open the door and go in, there was a frightful scuttling in the bushes, an enormous pig leapt out. And it was a pig which had got caught in the fence. And you know how a pig can scream, yes, really like a human being.